everybody. Welcome to the Smoking Tire Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Off the Record. Listen, guys, I know it's been really tense. Our relationship with the police is not very good right now. And when they're stopping you on the side of the road, it really has very little to do with safety. It has to do with revenue. Revenue for the municipalities, revenue for the insurance companies. We all know how this works. But trust me, you don't want to argue that charge on the side of the road. You don't want to get into an altercation with the cops. What do? You take the ticket. And you call Off the Record, or more important, more specifically, you go to offtherecord.com/TST, or you download the Off the Record app for iOS and Android. Off the Record sets you up with a local qualified attorney in the municipality where you need them, and they have a 97% success rate fighting moving violations, whether they're violations or even moving misdemeanors. offtherecord.com/TST, by using the /TST, you're going to get 10% off, not just the service you need now, but any legal service you use at Off the Record for the next 3 years, folks. Download the Off the Record app or go to offtherecord.com/TST. And if you download the app, use code TST10. And when you put that in, that's good starting now for the next 3 years. You don't want to be panicked on the side of the road arguing what you did with a cop, okay? You want to already know that you have an attorney. No matter where you are, that is going to handle this for you. And you can go about your day. Off the Record does what they do, and then you never see it again. It's a brilliant system, really. Use code TST10 with the Off the Record app or go to offtherecord.com/TST. Either way, 10% off all legal services you book from them from now until May of 2023. All right, offtherecord.com/TST. Hit them up. Be ready. Be prepared and fight it in court. Don't fight it on the side of the road. We're also brought to you by ourselves. We have new merch from today until June 24th in our Blip Shift store. We've got two items. We've got the Send It shirt and we've got the mask. Now, it's a pandemic. I wasn't going to be the first guy to sell a mask, but I'm not going to be the last guy either. And I had so much fun wearing the Safari 911 city bus fabric on my wedding day. I wore it on my vest on my wedding day. It was a boss move that I thought I'd let you guys wear it on your face. I wore the thing to Cars and Coffee this morning. It was a real big hit, actually. It was pretty sweet. I'm very stoked with it. Go to blipshift.com/TST from now until June 24th to get them. blipshift.com/TST. The Send It shirt, short long sleeve and hoodie, and of course the Safari 911 mask. Get them while they hot. All right, folks, on this episode of the podcast, my old pal Craig Lieberman is calling in from down in Orange County where he lives. Craig was actually one of my first friends in LA, and he's an interesting guy because he was the part of the inspiration for the Fast and the Furious, as well as the technical coordinator in terms of getting cars for the first three films. He's got a YouTube channel and a really interesting Instagram where he goes into a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff about the cars in Fast and the Furious as it's become quite the cult icon. So my old pal Craig Lieberman on the Smoking Tire Podcast.
Alrighty then, it's the Smoking Tire Podcast with my old pal Craig Lieberman. Hello!
Hello, good to see you. It's been a little while since we've connected, although, I mean, on video. Yeah. But we go back a ways, man. I was just thinking about that today, next new networks days.
Dude, you are a pre-LA friend. You were the first person that helped me make videos when, before I even moved to LA, you introduced me to Tim at BBI and Joey. And from that first video that you helped me facilitate, those guys went on to make millions of dollars.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had fun. Bikini driving school was fun.
Bro. Bikini driving school. I'd like to say we've come a long way, except it's, yeah. I think maybe it's gone backwards. I think that would be a step up from what we're doing now.
I forgot about bikini driving school.
How could you forget about bikini driving school? Craig, is it still around?
Next New Networks took it all down, but somebody pirated all their episodes and it's still posted up. And so it's still floating around. And that, of course, led to working with our good friend, what's his name, Emil Rensing, who's is he out of jail yet?
Inmate number 4322. of the Federal Corrections Institute at, I don't know where the fuck he is. That motherfucker got weekend furloughs, though. Fucking white-collar bullshit. That's, fucking crime.
Don't even get me in the sentencing for privileged people.
Damn it!
Don't get me started.
I know.
But from that, we did Badass, 16 episodes a year of girls. We got to talk about that.
Shooting Machine. Okay, so, all right. So, Craig has bounced around from some really interesting automotive content and automotive adjacent content. And someone at Playboy decided that he should shoot a series for Playboy that had naked girls doing like guy car shit. And so, that's the entire plot, really.
Well, Emil and I went in there to the address over off of Media Drive in L.A. We walked in there with a meeting with some people. We had a really great boss. I can't remember his name. I'll have to look it up. But he said, we saw your bikini driving school. We want to figure out how that can translate to something for Playboy. So we worked. Emil and I had some conversations, and we worked on some ideas. Let's have girls be women be empowered and do all the sports that men do, right? But they do it better. Like, they'll go shoot machine guns and they'll go drive race cars and all that.
Craig, what does better mean?
Well, I mean that they can do it's not reality. Well, it is reality TV because it's totally fake. So the girls are going to shoot machine guns, and then we can cut away shots and show them actually hitting shit and that kind of stuff. So we get it all done, and we go back, and we had another meeting, said, okay, we're going to do it. It's absolutely great. We'll start auditioning girls. So blah, 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 blah. And he says, we got to make sure that we have makeup on hand because we need to touch up all their parts and all that. And I'm like, just the face, right? He goes, no, they're going to be naked. Somehow I didn't make the connection that Playboy TV was going to shoot these episodes with the girls naked. So after that, there was the audition where we had a male and a female in there where 100 girls came through per day for us to do the auditions. They had read lines on while they were naked. Now, this sounded like the best job I could ever have, sitting there being one of the director and auditioning these girls. So the first 4 hours, I was stupefied, trying to understand that everything, these certain pieces of anatomy come in different sizes, different shapes, okay? Kind of a newbie there. And after a day of that, I called up my buddy who was the assistant director. He said, you need to take over because if I keep sitting there for 4 more days, I'm never going to go home.
the time and tried tradition of L.A. auditions. Our old friend Andy Duncan used to really revel in the auditions.
Sometimes you don't even have to make a thing afterwards.
He basically had a non-existent calendar. He would have auditions for like... If you call yourself a producer, you don't need online dating. You just have an audition.
Yeah, you're constantly developing a concept.
We've got a new project we're working on, and we've got some meetings coming up with some really big networks.
Can't tell you who.
You got to drop in some buzzwords. Yeah, you got to sign an NDA.
Yeah.
You got to drop in all the buzzwords.
You won't tell anyone how quickly I come.
But Craig has really found himself the perfect little niche on YouTube, haven't you, buddy? You get to be Fast and Furious car nerd forever and for money, which is fantastic.
Oh yeah, last month I made $836. Yeah. YouTube of their revenue was great,
bro. That's like a monthly payment on a Supra.
Mm-hmm.
like a new, you know, on a lease, 144 months maybe.
Who the hell is leasing cars?
I did, and it was stupid, and I won't ever again. Is your YouTube channel just your outlet then? If you're not about all that cash, what is your deal? Is it just a way to get people to stop DMing you?
Well, I created an Instagram about 3 years ago, and I started putting all the pictures up because I was in the process of writing the book, right? So I think I have a book. It's called Crashing Cars on Amazon.
Yeah. We'll get that link up for you. Zach will background that.
If you like. But I wanted to put all the pictures on Instagram because I didn't want to produce an expensive picture book And people would complain that the book is $40 just to get the pictures. And plus, you know, I've got over 1,100 posts on Instagram in the last couple of years. And Isham was telling a snippet of the story. And then that wasn't enough because people continue to ask this. You get this all the time. I watch your YouTube and see the comments ask the same questions over and over and over again. Were unrelated, like, how should I change my oil and stuff like that. So then I said, okay, I'm going to do a YouTube channel because about 2 summers ago, I found 7 hours of videotape that I personally shot on set while we were making Fast 1 and Fast 2 where we were building the picture cars. I didn't realize I still had those videotapes. So I digitized it and started putting it into the videos. And it's some amazing shit. Some stuff I didn't even remember because, you know, I have notes and all that stuff. I have big files, you remember?
Yeah, yeah.
And seeing the video just sparked so many memories. And so it just took off. And I'm pushing something around 100,000 subscribers, getting close to that.
Yeah, your Instagram is fun. I like your Instagram. And it's got some really hilarious behind-the-scenes photos and, like, updates on what happened to some of the cars. The comments are so fucking brutal. Your commenters are really, really bad because they literally have no interest in watching the video. They only want you to describe to them in the comment exactly what happens in the video.
That's about 25% of what's going on. Yeah. And even after I'll really explain bad. The comment to some people, I understand that my audience is diversified. I've got kids who are 12, 14 years old or starting to get into cars, which is great, so they ask remedial questions. Then I've got people who feel entitled to for me to take my day out of my time out of my day to write a 2,000-word post explaining the entire everything.
Don't have a copy and paste. You got a doc. You got to have a doc going. Just copy and paste, bro. I have a whole doc going on the side, list of cars for 20 to 30K, and I just boop. Copy paste. Here's a recommendation. I ain't writing that shit every time. I got shit to do, homie.
I'm not copying paste because I'm on a phone. I would have 27,000. Yeah. I have a whole website called Fast and Furious Facts, and everything is fucking posted. There are pictures of the cars, specs on the cars, horsepower ratings, quarter mile times, blog post about everything. I get questions like, "Are you buying the Mark IV Supra?" And I get it. I was getting it 20 times a week.
Oh, now the Mark V Supra, the new one.
Mark V. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Did you buy one? I didn't see you bought. You didn't buy one, did you?
No, I have an R35.
Yeah, yeah. You're the same one you've had, right?
Yes, it's my favorite car of the 40-something fucking cars I've actually paid for. This is my favorite car I've ever owned.
I'm so surprised that you are so about the 35 because you owned a 34. And I love the 34s like so much. It's such a fucking great driving experience to me. What do you like so much about the 35?
It makes a hero out of a zero.
At least you can admit that.
It's a good car. I drive the thing every day. You know, you put you'd have a set of extra wheels and tires, stick it on there. The brake pads are dual purpose. It's like a Mustang or any number of cars. You just, you know, do a tune, E85, exhaust, intakes, and you're making 700 plus horsepower and you drive it.
Down where you live, E85 is everywhere, huh? It's like big in the OC. Everyone's got the E85 down there.
I know there's one in Huntington Beach, Santa Ana, and Laguna Niguel, which is 9 miles from me. So.
Oh, cool, yeah. Do you remember that dude, Chris? I think, was he a homie of yours? He had a Schweitzer GTR we filmed. He was a real fucking Goomba motherfucker down in Laguna.
Oh, he had the barrel in his garage.
Yeah, he had drums shipped to his house. He had a garage full of ethanol. Yeah.
Remember, he went to change. We show up to shoot.
Dude, Craig, this is the best. Tell Zach.
The guy was super nice. I'm not talking shit about him, but he's very nice.
No, he's hilarious. Chris, shout out.
Really,
you're the man.
Really nice guy. But we show up to shoot, and he's wearing like a black sweatsuit. And it's just morning time, and we're showing up early. And we were just like, all right, we're going to go out and shoot. And he goes, hold on, I'll get a little change. And he goes and changes, and he comes back out in a white sweatsuit, right?
You actually undersold it, because what he was actually wearing was a blue Adidas sweat top with white Adidas sweat pants. And he goes, I'm gonna go change, look good for this video. He goes inside and he inverted them. Came back out with a white Adidas top.
That's
and
right.
The blue pants. He just took the other half of both outfits and switched.
Refresh my memory, was he Armenian?
No, he's a Goomba. He's a Sicilian. He was a Sicilian.
That's my people right
An
there.
An Orange County Sicilian. He was
so funny.
He lived right up the road from, what's that big casino down there?
Morongo?
No, not Morongo. The other Indian casino. Craig, help me out. The one that's like out by the way to... this doesn't matter for a fucking show at all. By out towards Palomar Mountain. That's the one I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, off of the 76. I don't know the
name of that. Yeah. It's the one that you get there and you're like, who put this here? Why is this even here? This is such a random place.
Because it's free land, that's why.
Yeah. But, dude, Craig, now I don't think we've talked in a couple of years because since I last spoke to you, like a whole bunch of new cool Japanese cars are eligible for importation now.
Right.
What should we start buying?
You know, I've never been a fan of the R33, but they are of age. The R34 is coming up in 2024, you know, the 25-year rule. I know there's a bunch of people who say, well, there's already a bunch of R34s here, but they're here illegally because they're not federally legal. And there was a whole big blow up when I did a video with Sean Morris, who used to work for Motorex. And without mentioning his name, we alluded to a YouTuber in Florida who has an R34, and people just fucking flipped. You're talking about Adam LZ. We never said the guy's name. I can't even tell you the stuff that happened behind the scenes, you know, what was going on, because I'm not going to want to embarrass anybody.
But you can give a piece of consumer advice and say that you should never buy a Skyline with a Florida title. That's just good consumer advice. It's just a headache waiting to happen.
And every time I write that, I get 400 DMs that said, but what about if I do this? What if I do that? What if I do the other thing?
Anything else is luck. You could do that, but you are rolling on luck. We talked to our good friend Rutledge Wood the other day, who just ordered a 33 through Sean and said that it can pass briefly through my sticky fingers before going on a truck to Georgia. So I've never driven a 33. I'm very excited. Have you spent much time driving 33s?
I've been in an R33. I've never driven one. I've driven a couple of R32s, which I really, really like because they're light, they're flickable. It feels like a pure driving experience. The R34 always felt a little bit bulkier to me. And then, of course, the R35 is a fucking tank. Things do 900 pounds.
That's a big porker. But it's fucking sticky. It's a sticky porker.
Sticky. But you can't go wrong with any of them. I mean, it just depends on how you mod it.
What do you know what the dimension difference is between the 33 and 34, Craig, like offhand?
I don't know off the top of my head. Okay. The 33 and the 34, if I had to bet, I would say the 34 is at least 3 or 4 inches longer.
Wow.
At least.
I don't know why, but visually I feel like the 33 is the longest, actually. It might just be a an optical illusion, though. I don't know. Could be wrong. I like the almost modernity of the 34 and the lightness of the 32. That's kind of where I'm at.
I like the headlights on the R34, and I like the MFD, the multifunction display on top of the dash, because that was PlayStation stuff.
Wasn't that actually done by the Polyphony or whatever, or the Gran Turismo people?
When it pops up, it says Polyphony Digital.
Yeah. Oh, Zach actually has the measurements. Zach, what do we got for measurements?
It looks like let me pull this over. The length of the 34 is 4675, this is in millimeters, 4675, and the R34 is actually shorter. It's just 4600.
So I was right. So it's not I was not an optical illusion. The 33 is longer.
The 34 is the widest by, only a small margin compared to the 33.
Uh-huh.
It has a shorter wheelbase than the 33, and the track dimensions are the same. As the 33.
That's hilarious. Wow. So it's all everything underneath is the same. It's just how they drape the body and the valence and stuff like that. Yeah,
wow,
yeah, yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's like McLaren gets all cheaty. Like, oh, yeah, the LT is like 4 inches longer. It's like, yeah, because you put a splitter on it. Like, it's not long. It's not actually longer. Come on.
That's nuts.
And you see the new 765 LT coming out, the long tail?
It looks hot. It does look hot.
Sexy car.
Have you had a go in a 720 yet?
My buddy has one.
I'm an evangelist for the 720 because it's fucking bananas, and I hope they don't ruin it. I hope it's not too stiff and too race car-y because the 720 has the perfect balance of batshit speed, some motorsport theater, but also a great amount of comfort, and I hope they don't ruin that.
Yeah.
Oh, scroll up. Does it have the H.R. Geiger seats, Zach? I think it did. Yep, there they are. The H.R. Geiger seats. It's like Jonathan Davis's microphone from Korn. Remember? Like it wraps around you like that.
It's like the car is about to eat you. It does. It's consuming you.
They're so awful to get in and out of, those seats. But then once you're sitting in them, it's amazing how comfortable they
are. That's true.
You cannot believe it. It's very, very weird.
That's true of a lot of sports cars. Hard to get in and out of, but once you're in there, they're very comfortable.
Yeah. You know what I did this morning? I test drove a Ferrari 328, and it was real nice. I don't even want to admit how much I enjoyed it, but I really enjoyed it. It was great.
Well, you got enough hair on your chest to pull it off.
Bro, I got the look. I am ready. Although the sideburns might have done it more from back in the day. Remember when I really started to go bald, but I kept the sideburns for 6 extra months past when I should have?
That was just in denial. I haven't gone bald yet, but
your hair looks great, dude.
I'm lucky to have it in my. I'm the only boy in my family who has hair.
You are the perfect person, I would imagine. You need it more than your life.
It should be really much longer with some really steep bangs.
Your life depends much more on talking to women than most other people in your family, and so you really need to have that hair going on.
I don't talk to women, only my wife.
What are you liking in the car world right now? What are you seeing out there that's tickling your fancy?
Well, you can't go wrong with the Porsche GT3 RS. I mean, everybody loves that. I mean, it's really hard to say no to something like that. You know, the McLarens would be at the top of my list if I was looking to make a move from the R35, for sure, a McLaren. God, beyond that.
Have you had a go in the new Supra since you're so well associated with the old one?
I did. I drove one. I mean, my disappointment with the Supra comes only from the proportions. The car that I saw was the FT1. I was at Cars and Coffee down at the Ford building back in 2014. I actually have the footage from that day. And when they showed up, I said, they make that, I'm fucking buying it. There's no question about it, I'm buying the car. And then we got this little feminine hygiene product looking, sawed off, stumpy looking thing. And the looks are okay, but to me, the proportions are wrong. But I had an open mind.
If you'd never seen the FT1, maybe you'd be okay with it. But the FT1 was a foot longer. So it really drew out the exaggerated form, you know?
But that's what it's supposed to do. Long hood, short stubby back. I mean, yeah. They've been doing it in sports cars for decades. Jaguar back in the freaking 1950s. I mean, because, like, you know the drill.
Yeah.
But then I sat in the car, and I'm like, there's no room in this car. And then what turned me off is it's all BMW Z4. And that Cytech joystick controller they have for the shifter is one of the most loathed things I can think of. And then I don't understand this manufacturer's trend to turn their navigation display into something that looks like an iPad that's been Velcroed to the top of the dash.
You know what I think that is? I swear. I think that's A, I think it's to lower the dash, because if you have to like build like a hood around it, it raises the height of the whole dash, and I think you can have a much lower dash if you concede the sort of glued on screen thing. I think that's part of it. And I think the other part of it is if the screen fucks up, it makes it way easier to replace.
Yeah, and that's what I got from that. I'm basically, when I saw it, I said, they know their system is such a piece of shit, they're tired of taking dashes apart to get them out. So we're just going to make it so it's, you pull it up with a dental pick and you slide it out and unplug it.
Yeah, I can't argue with you there. It was weird. I think when I first drove the car and it just on the press launch, you know, it's just here's a Supra surrounded by other Supras and okay. And you go, okay, you know, it's not a bad car. It's a nice little car. You know what I mean? If you don't think about it culturally and in context of what, quote, a Toyota should be, like, sure, it's a fine little car. Okay. But the more I thought about the cultural context of it, the more I started thinking about what a Toyota performance car really should be. And, you know, I was like, I got more and more disappointed with it as time went on, you know, without anything else really changing. Having said that, I get the new updated one with more power next week, and then the four-cylinder possibly with a manual after that. So we'll see.
How much lighter is the four-cylinder one? Do you know?
I have no idea. I don't know. But all your points were echoed, Craig, by Jason Camisa and everybody else, that it needs more identity, you know?
Yeah, if it had the wraparound dash like the original Mark IV did, at least as a nod to the heritage and the legacy of the Mark IV, I could get behind it, you know, even if it was BMW dials and all that kind of stuff or updated versions, whatever. And that SciTech, I was just, I mean, I was
the glass dildo shifter.
Yeah. You know, for years I was doing consultation work for JD Power, doing ride and drives and dealership trainings and consumer trainings with a bunch of different vehicles. It did, I don't know, 400 some dealership audits in the course of almost 5 years. Going out to these dealers, specifically BMW, Dodge, and Ford, and all that, I'll tell you this. I've learned one big lesson. I will never own a BMW outside of the warranty.
Yeah. Yeah, my dad had a 750 that got crashed into, and they tried to fix it, and nothing worked after that. I mean, it goes together once. It's like IKEA. One time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, culturally, though, like, so when the Mark IV was new, right, middle 90s, I was like, I was in middle school and high school. Sorry, Craig. And you were buying this thing new on the showroom floor. When that car got phased out back in the day, the story I was told was that it was just priced out. It was too expensive. Nobody was really buying it. I mean, what was the culture around that car at the time?
Okay, so I didn't buy mine new. I bought mine in 1998. And the reason I bought it is because I had a 347 Fox Body Mustang with the big blower on it.
Yes.
And the guy in his Super gapped me. And I said, that's it. This fucking thing's gone. And so I went and bought the Super. 3 days later, it was in the paint shop and then still in Grady parts, yada, yada, yada. But what was going on at the time was the Toyota Supra Aero Top 6-speed turbo was $52,000 and change sticker price. And the Corvette for that year was about the same horsepower, 300 and something horsepower. Zach can look it up. And it was selling for several thousand dollars less.
Yeah, I think so, there was the Grand Sport, right? And it was like 42 or 43 grand. It was noticeably cheaper.
And so old white people like me would typically say, I ain't buying one of them there Japanese rice rockets. I can get me some good old-fashioned American muscle, or whatever the attitude was. But, you know, you're talking dollars for performance. It would hard to be making an argument for the Supra and against Corvette. I mean, it's just numbers at that point. But I wanted the car because the reasons I told you. Exactly. And at the last year, last year of production, I think it was 1998 in the U.S., they sold 1,220-something units in the U.S. So it just wasn't moving.
How many GTRs did they sell here last year? Probably less.
Yeah, oh yeah, less for sure. I think it was last year or the year before they sold something like 600 and something.
Yeah. Not a lot. 1,200, I mean, for 1,200 units for a company like Toyota, even in the 90s, is low.
Yeah,
that's very low. Yeah,
but it's a halo product. If you park a Supra in the front of the dealership, people come into the dealership. It's why, remember when the Dodge Viper came out in 93? Mm-hmm. Every fucking Dodge passenger car had the Viper grill, right?
Yeah. Wow, they put that shit on everything. It was the Frank's Red Hot of grills. They put that shit on everything.
That's very funny. It's just the iron sight type thing, mm-hmm. right?
It's even Dodge Stratuses, which were heinous cars, and Neons had a Viper grill.
So, hey, you know what was a good one? Remember the Dodge Avenger IROC car? It was cool. No, I swear it was cool. It looked great. I think this was probably 95. Yes, look at that. Sorry, Craig on the FaceTime can't see it, but it's basically somewhere between a NASCAR and a touring car, and it looks fucking rad.
Yeah, but we went over this when we were looking at that LeBaron, and it's like any race car looks awesome because it's just slammed and has great sidewall to wheel profile, and like the only thing about this that looks like an adventure is
the front clip, really.
The painted-on grill.
It's basically a front clip on a NASCAR.
It is a good the shape of the car is cool.
And front wheel drive, so that automatically disqualifies it as being anything serious.
Yeah, right? The IROC one was not. The IROC one was basically an Avenger body on a NASCAR. But yeah, I know. When I was a kid, though, and I didn't really know any better, I thought that two-door Avenger street car was cool before I knew better.
Because you're like, is that a stealth? No? It's still cool. Yeah.
Okay, now look up 1982 Dodge Charger Shelby Edition.
Oh, I know those. That is a sad vehicle.
My teacher had one, and she used to let me detail that. And it was front-wheel drive, and it said Shelby on it, so it was automatically cool. And the gear shift was like a trucker gear shift. You had to, like that to change gears, and I thought that was the coolest thing ever. And then they came out with a whole line of similar cars, the Plymouth Laser, the Dodge Daytona Turbo Z, and take a look at those things.
I will admit that I really liked the end of the run Dodge Daytonas. At the very end, when it got to like the white on white with the white turbo fan wheels, super cocaine Daytonas, I kind of dug those. There was one at Radwood last year, and it was bitching. It was red Shelby Daytona, and the dude did a 6.4 Hemi swap, rear wheel drive in it. It was kick ass, totally DL. It was the coolest. Musto was drooling on that fucker.
They, in Too Fast, Too Furious, they wanted to make an SRT4 the main car for Paul Walker.
Yeah.
So, did I tell you that story?
Yeah, you have, but give the people what they want, Craig.
So, my history with Dodges was, you know, my parents had a 79 Chrysler LeBaron Town & Country station wagon, beige with simulated wood siding on it.
It's like a $50,000 car on Bring a Trailer right now.
Wrong place, if you said. But so I'm sitting in that meeting with John Singleton, sitting two seats down from me, and my boss is straddling him on either side. And this woman sitting across from me, Melissa Carroll from University, is like, okay, so we've got Dodge. They're coming in. They're going to give us the Neon SRT4, and it's going to be Paul's car for the movie. And we're going to make it the top car, and I'm fucking writhing in my seat. Can I use curse words here?
Uh-huh. Okay. Fuck yeah, you can.
I'm writhing in my seat, and I'm like... Singleton leans over. He goes, you got something to say, Lieberman? I said, no, sir. I'll wait my turn. He goes, no. That's okay. You can speak your mind. We're paying you. You speak your mind. I said, I'll wait my turn. He says, listen, I don't want no booty-ass shit in my movie. If this is going to be booty, I need to know right now. And I said, well, you can put lipstick on a pig, but it's still a pig. And then Melissa Crowell spent the last 9 months putting together a multi-million dollar licensing deal with Dodge, was saying, are you telling us to turn down X number of million dollars? I won't disclose the amount. And I said, no, I'm not telling you that. I'm just going to say that any reasonable car enthusiast knows anything about cars knows that that's a fucking rental car. And I don't care how many nitrous bottles you put in that thing, you're just going to lose credibility. And that was the end of that.
I mean, you're probably right. I think you were right. There's a similar story that... Bob Gale, who wrote Back to the Future, likes to tell. The Ford marketing guy came into Universal, and they had a whole pitch ready for Doc Brown to turn a time machine, to build a time machine out of a Mustang. And he loves to, whenever he tells these Back to the Future nerds, I've heard him do it 3 or 4 times, he gets these fucking nerds assembled, and he's like, and then I sat there and I told him, Doc Brown doesn't drive a fucking Mustang. And everyone goes, what?
Because Doc Brown wants to need to make repairs on his vehicle.
That was the fucking silliest shit. Fucking they lose their shit when he says that.
The Mustang guys get crazy, huh?
I mean, I'm glad he's right, though. The movie Back to the Future, many screenwriters will tell you this. Movie nerds will tell you this. Back to the Future is almost a perfect movie. They study it in every film school. Like, the script, like, the way the structure of the movie goes, like, the appeal to, like, adults and kids and all these cross genres that happen, and, like, the fact that, like, it's a movie about a kid whose mom wants to fuck him for half the movie and that gets completely blown over. Like, it's actually, like, it is almost a perfect movie. What's his name? James Lipton,
the Actor's Studio.
Inside the Actor's Studio guy. He said that you will not find a more perfect film than Back to the Future. And part of that is the fucking DeLorean.
How did you play a person whose mother wants to fuck me, Michael?
Well,
you resolve the
terrified intention. Thomas F. Wilson's acting in that. Someone, I read a Reddit thread about all, you know, Thomas F. Wilson plays like 8 different Biffs in the series.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all totally believable as their own standalone characters. It doesn't really occur to you ever that it's this same dude playing all these. It's fucking Thomas F. Wilson rules.
I think any Doors Go Up car could have done well for the DeLorean, but honestly, the DeLorean, in retrospect, now that I'm older, looking through that lens, I can't think of any car that would have been better than the DeLorean now.
No, great casting choice. The stainless steel, the look, the fact that it in hindsight, this 1985 release date really lines up with the John DeLorean craziness and the failed car company. I think it's a fucking amazing casting call. Amazing.
Yeah, I wonder how many it took to keep those cars moving on set, because as you remember, DeLoreans.
It took six. I know there was the A and the B. There's the hero car, the A car. I'm such a nerd. There's the B car, which is used for like action shots, like
rolling stuff.
Yeah. Then there was a cutaway car for the interior. There was the train car, and then the B car became the wheelie car later. And then there was a C car, which is the one that got hit by the train.
Wait, they had a car that did a wheelie?
Yeah, when they fucking throw the last fire log in the train on Back to the Future 3, it does a wheelie.
It's so fast it does a wheelie.
Don't make it started on that. Oh, wheelie cars.
Well, yeah, I was looking at your Instagram.
There you go. Zach's got a picture up of the Charger with the Papa wheelie bars underneath it.
Yeah, so every time I post that, I get comments that say, my whole childhood was a lie.
Not entirely true. There are Chargers that will do wheel stands.
For sure. But as you know, if you're in a drag race and you got sticky slicks, you might smoke the tires a little bit. But when you get traction, the car starts to come up. It doesn't drive like that for any really length of time, right? So it comes up on, and then you spin the tires, and the nose comes down. But the wheelie bars, you can't see because it was all CG. What blows people minds is they don't realize that the Supra and the Charger never actually jumped in front of a train. The cars actually jump, cut, and then later on, the train drove by. And
what? It was what? Just a place to... I'm sorry. Wait. There's people that are surprised by this. There's people that are surprised that shots are layered in movies.
And
they fuck out of here.
They wouldn't risk movie stars to time a train jump perfectly. After Vin Diesel was up all night.
I have a lot of young viewers, or viewers who just don't understand the motion picture making process. They don't understand.
I guess. Maybe we just take it for granted. Do we take it for granted how movies work?
I think so.
How do movies work, Craig?
Well, they use multiple shots, so they don't always use the same car driving on the same fucking road.
Yeah.
They could have four cars, depending on what it is. You know the drill.
Wait. Yeah, I've seen car chases that occur in, like, seven different cities.
Go back and watch Bullet, the same Volkswagen Beetle and Brown car on the side of every road.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and the car jumps the same piece of road, like, three or four times, and it's just shot from different angles.
I tried to watch Bullet. When I went to review the newest Bullet Mustang, I was like, this is going to be the time that I sit down and get through Bullet. And just like every other time I tried to watch it, I fell fucking asleep. Bullet stinks. It sucks.
The jumps down the hills in San Francisco were better than like The Rock. The Rock I remember watching, and you really could see they had a kick ramp. Because if you've been there, it's like it's flat and it drops away, and the Ferrari just suddenly rockets up and then does, and then it just drops so quickly it like tags the ground and then goes down the hill.
Yeah, it's really ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk that's happening. Yeah.
The problem with knowing something about how movies are made, I can't watch sit through an action movie and not just go, this, you can ask my wife, this fucking bullshit, didn't happen, like bullshit, CG. And she's just like, shut up, just shut up.
I know. I understand what you mean. I can't watch anybody's car reviews. No, what was the newest the Ryan Reynolds movie? That I not like
Six Underground?
Six Underground. Yeah, that one was a good one. It was Michael Bay, but it was very self-aware Michael Bay, and so it was really a good time. I enjoyed that one.
They were like, just be Michael Bay and own it, and he's like, "Okay, you sure? Are you sure?
You sure? Because I'm going to blow everything up twice."
The explosions have explosions.
Deadpool. I was on a flight back from Thailand last year, and I watched the entire Deadpool series. I hadn't seen it up until that point.
It's great, it's isn't good. It?
It's real
fantastic.
Funny.
This actually, there's some Deadpool-y elements, I think, in this in Six Underground. Ryan Reynolds basically plays, you know, one character, him, and he plays himself in this one too.
he's a very funny person, but I couldn't get through it.
That's so, like the entire cast of Fast and Furious. They played the same person in every movie they've ever been in.
Wait, have we discussed the Fast and Furious musical, Craig?
You do know I like women, right?
No, I'm serious. Do you know that there is a musical parody of the Fast and the Furious and that it's amazing?
It's great.
Like,
guess I'm not on their mailing list.
Dude, you have to come up to LA and see it.
Yeah, you live in
North
County.
You will find
holy
this it's like when I say parody, I mean it's like the Team America of Fast and Furious parodies.
That I would like.
Will fucking love it. There's an entire song they do called Archetypal Character, where they pretty much just discuss how every character only does one thing. It's fucking really good. The writing, we had the guys who wrote it on the show, and they're fucking hilarious.
Well, I love Team America World Police. That's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, if you love Team America, this is the Team America of Fast and the Furious. It's really... Someone's got to give these guys fucking money.
I know.
They were on a real roll until coronavirus.
It's so well written. I had no idea when I went and saw it how hard I'd laugh and how good and on point it would be.
Oh. Yeah, and they have women playing Ludacris, Tyrese, and Jason Statham are all played by women, and they're fucking amazing. And
so Tyrese would be easy to play because all you got to do is go, duh.
Yeah.
Bruh.
Dude, his Jeeps, though. What about Voltron Motors? Can we talk about Voltron Motors? Apparently not still copyrighted from the He-Man days. It's just...
Oh, is that his Jeep company?
Yeah, Voltron Motors is Tyrese's Jeep company, and they build the ugliest Jeeps in the world.
Well, because he did such a great job with the Too Fast, Too Furious Eclipse Spider design in that fucker.
Did he do that?
So the car was purple with some Pavo purple, and then we had some 19-inch wheels. And the wheel arches are really big, right?
Yeah.
So then the Eddie Paul... who was a guy running a picture car warehouse in El Segundo, he had decided to do spider web graphics, black with little silver dots, which was very remedial in my view, but whatever. And then they decided to do the interior gold, yellow suede, the whole interior yellow suede.
Yikes.
So Tyrese walks into the picture car warehouse and he says, "Oh, hell no, I ain't driving no fucking Lakers car." And so he saw a car in a magazine in Florida when the production moved down to Florida, and it was this blue car with those exact graphics on it. He says, "We're going to do that." So we had to take the interior out of the cars, send them off to another shop to get four car interiors completely redone, to get the whole car repainted with airbrushed. Four cars painted in two and a half days. And to get it back to us.
Wow.
And then he ordered 20-inch Lowenhart BR5 chrome wheels. And then the studio got the bill, and there was a debate about who was going to pay that.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious. You know what's funny? Now that I look at the graphics on that car, that must have been painted on a donk. He must have seen a donk in Florida and gotten that.
It was another Eclipse Spider. Had that
really?
Exact job, but with a blue beard. Yes. Color me surprised. The one that was the most offended, here's a car that could not be made today. Slapjack Supra, the gold one, had an Afro
pick. Oh, the Afro pick. Yeah.
Now, if a white team had done that, oh, hell.
Yeah, no,
well,
that's...
Yeah.
That would be not good, man.
Right.
I actually didn't notice the Afro pick until you told me about it the first time. I never noticed it in the film. It is kind of subtle until you go, "Hey, that's an Afro pick," and you go, "Oh shit, it is."
Well, the character was always supposed to wear an Afro pick in his hair. You know, the great thing about those movies is that
If you look, it's definitely
it's definitely an Afro pick.
It's definitely there, but like, you could suspend disbelief if you didn't see the driver. You know what I mean? Like, if you didn't...
Well, also, all the cars in the first movie had, like, the robots flying forward, and with
the
graphic...
The Guardian Angels.
The Guardian Angels, which I've never seen before, so this kind of looks like that. You're like, all right, it's another Fast and Furious, something
well,
flying forward graphic.
My Supra, I mentioned to somebody, why is there a Trojan War helmet on there? And then somebody said, a Trojan War helmet is not what you think it is. You need to look it up on Urban Dictionary. And so I stopped referring it to that, and I started calling it the Nuclear Gladiator.
Oh, yeah. Nuclear Gladiator is a good term.
And then my Maxima had the shark with laser beams coming out of his eyes, which was...
Did it actually have a shark with laser beams coming out of its eyes? Was that pre-Zoolander? Or who was that? Austin Powers?
Austin Powers, yeah.
Wait, but did you get it from Austin Powers?
That wasn't me, man. That was Troy Lee.
Oh, okay. Maybe, I bet he got it from Austin Powers. Troy Lee would definitely watch Austin Powers and go, "Yeah, we're going to paint
Holy
shark.
Shit.
Got a shark with Zach's got the picture. I've never noticed that before."
Wow, it's a yellow laser coming out of an angry shark.
All right. Okay. What year did Austin Powers come out? Was it before 2000? I don't know. If it came out first, he definitely got that from Austin Powers. That's so funny.
Austin Powers 97.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's a perfect time. The timeline.
This is Troy Lee on the phone. Yeah, you need graphics, and no problem. You know what I'm going to do with these motherfuckers? I'm going to do sharks with laser beams coming out of their eyes.
No. Dude, I want that shark with the laser beam from your car, like, on a helmet. I want a side of my helmet with a fucking laser beam coming out of my eyes.
Well, Modern Image did all the graphics. So.
Oh, did they?
Oh, yeah. They did all, because, just like you or anybody else, you work with the people you know and trust, right?
Yeah.
So I called up Modern Image. You know what, Craig? Do you know anybody who can do graphics? Yeah, so I called up Rob, who was the owner of Modern Image back then. And so those things were multiple layers and then airbrushed. So all the shadowing stuff is done with airbrushing. This is before you could do like a digital print on one piece of vinyl.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You had to layer. It led to layer all the pieces and stuff.
Oh, God. Those graphics are $1,200 to $1,500 now for a full set.
Oh, can you still get them from them? They still got the file?
They still got the files.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
They got a cease and desist letter way before, allegedly, back in the early 2000s, and now everybody's selling it on eBay. So
how funny.
They haven't been enforcing the trademark, so, you know, that's the dead issue.
Hey, did you hear about this, about our buddy from B is for Build?
Eleanor thing?
Yeah,
kind of. So what, did he build a clone and then got it seized?
He called it an Eleanor. That the trademark is on the name. If you any reference to Eleanor, they own the name.
And then so now what? They just took it and.
I haven't heard the back end. They allegedly, and I'm always reticent to take first social media posts as gospel, but allegedly the car has been taken. So wow. Seized.
Let's see. Allegedly seized by copyright holders, has apparently disappeared from the web over the conflict with the producers behind Gone in 60 Seconds. Well, that sucks.
I think there's more to a story. The person who owns it is a female. They owns the Eleanor name, and she's licensed it to at least one car manufacturer.
Yeah, yeah. Huh. So,
am I right? Did I read all that right?
I think, yeah, there's only one authorized builder of the, quote, authorized replicas, and then anyone else who does it. Oh, shit.
Well, and it's hard because if you're building this on YouTube and you are profiting from those videos, you are now kind of making a form of entertainment with that car.
Yeah, it's sort
of
commercial.
If you're a private person, you're like, yeah, I'm going to build an Eleanor replica, and you tell your neighbor, like, that's it, you know? Yeah.
But, Craig, the article says not just the name, the visual design of the car as well. So I guess, yeah.
Well, you can change 15% of it and get away with it. I mean, shit. Did slightly different paint color, slightly different front bumper or grill, whatever.
That thing, when that movie came out, that fucking car looked badass. Frankly don't think it's aged that well. I think it's of the era.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree.
Yeah.
I liked it when the movie came out. I thought it was badass.
Mm-hmm.
And then exact same analysis that today it just kind of looks like what it was.
Yeah,
but
also,
go ahead. Like the proportions of the GT500, I mean, they're very big. Like even just sitting here now, we're looking at this photo, and Craig, I know you can't see it, but... you know, the wheels are probably 18s, right? And they look tiny.
Yeah.
They look tiny on that body. So even if you had it back in stock form, like, that's a really bulky-looking muscle car.
Yeah, like, it's got, like, these kind of molded over fenders and then 18-inch wheels. Whereas today, if you were building it, you'd have a widened haunch from higher with probably a 20-inch wheel, mm-hmm. and it would look a lot tougher.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's weird how trends change, because I remember when my buddy got on his Honda Prelude back in the 80s, he got 195 50 15s on his Honda Prelude, and fucking high school stopped to come out and look at that. I'm not kidding.
I think I have a 295 40 a 205 40 15 on the front of my Lambo. It's really little. A really little wheel. Dude, the Del Sol. Yeah. Oh, the Prelude? 15s on the Prelude?
1984 Honda Prelude.
That would have been the wheels that had those little squares on them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the plus wheel.
Still friends with him. I used to date his sister, but I've known the guy 40 years.
have you kept track of where all these old cars of yours have ended up?
Yeah. So, great question. So, the Maxima was sold to a guy by the name of John Teisling, who was in New Jersey. who then sold it to, or Colorado. I always get those two mixed up. Sorry, so I'd have to look back at my notes. But got sold to him, and that gold got sold to a guy by, it got sold to the Branson Museum, the car museum in Branson. I think it's called Hollywood Star Cars. It was there for a while, and then I got sold to a collector who collects a lot of different movie cars from a lot of different movies. His name is Mick, and that's up in, I believe, Minnesota or Michigan. I think it's Michigan. And so that car's still around. The Super got sold once to a buyer in Belgium, and then it got resold to a guy in Holland, the Netherlands. And this guy's name is Arjen de Koenig, and he runs a company called Paradigit, P-A-R-A-D-I-G-I-T. And the car is still sitting with him. He's got a bunch of actual movie cars. An Eclipse, Hero 2 Eclipse. He's got a Hero 2 S2000. He's got a Hero Charger. He's got a bunch of cars, not just from Fast and Furious, but I think he's got 5 or 6 Fast and Furious cars, and then a few others.
Wow, the movie car guys are crazy, man. The guys who build their own little movie car museums.
They rotate them around. I've learned how the business works. The guy puts them in a museum, and it's there for a while, and then he sells it to another guy at another museum, and then sells it to another guy at another museum, and it gets passed around. The Skyline was the interesting story. When the Skyline got sold, I had just restored the car back to blue. The picture behind me is the way I restored the car. So it was blue like that. Universal rented it, painted it silver, did the Shelby GT stripes on a Japanese car.
Yeah, the series one stripes. Yeah. Hey, it's not that bad. Look, you could put TEs on a Mustang and it's all right. You know, it goes both ways.
They didn't put TEs on it. They liked the HRE 446s that I slapped on the car for the shoot because I wasn't going to let them keep my wheels. So I got the car back and immediately made an appointment with the paint shop, stripped it down to bare metal, and painted it blue. The car was originally black, and that was the first federally legal Motorex Skyline ever produced, ever brought into the country. That was number one. That's the car that Paul Walker drove for a couple of months and decided he wanted a different color, so he gave it back to Motorex, and then I bought it. So that car got sold after I restored the car back to blue to a buyer in Tennessee. It was called Motor Mavericks, which got changed. The name got changed to something else, Ride Revolution. And then the car got painted black. All the stereo stuff got ripped out, went back to black. They had a transmission problem, and then the car got sold, I think, around 2013. Now it's with the private owner in East Coast who's going through a divorce and has been stashing the car away. And so that's all done, and then he'll probably build the car.
Nice, nice.
What it's done to the engine on that car?
It had 20 HKS 2530 turbos. There's pictures on my website, I think, Fast and Furious Factory. You just could look at the video. But it had this really cool Group M carbon Kevlar air intake box that lined up with the stock pipes. Had a 150-shot wet nitrous system. The motor was actually quite pretty. It had the exhaust and all that shit, and upgraded injectors, a cam.
But didn't it also have a crazy stereo shit in it? That's a third one down on the list there, Zach. It had like the psycho like screens and shit everywhere, right?
So I had the flip up screen, which was all the rage back in the day.
Yeah, dude, everyone needs a flip out.
Yeah, yeah. So and then on the top of the airbag on the left side, it had a motorized panel in the airbag thing where they came up with another TV. In the trunk, it had a center pod that came up with blue fiberglass, and the TV was there, surrounded by two giant JBL 12W12 GTIs. And all the installation work was done over at West Coast Customs when we were in Inglewood.
Oh my God, that's fucking OG West Coast Customs, isn't it?
OG, second OG, because the first one was down there in Laguna Hills. But they all the sound systems, I basically drew it out on a piece of paper, brought it to Ryan. I said, here, build this. He said, what's my budget? I said, whatever.
Dude, what did this car weigh? those like W7s in the trunk? They're enormous.
W12s.
Dude, go back to the interior, Zach. Like the regular interior. Dude, there's
forgot the three nitrous bottles.
The three nitrous bottles. Yo, there's so much shit in this car.
Yeah, so much dangerous stuff. Put the nitrous next to me.
Sorry, go ahead, Zach.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, you got to remember this car was built as a show car for Meguiar's.
Oh, yeah. So they just wanted everything. Just give me everything.
I mean, it's good. Look, it worked. Like the movie, it's cars like this in the movies, they just grabbed everybody's attention back then. It's like, this is a catalog. It's like the Nopey catalog on screen. And you're just like, here's everything you can buy.
Did it drive good?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was a great car. I mean, I had plans for it when I got it back. The nitrous was going to come out of it and go with a single bottle in the trunk. Jeez. And it was going to get different wheels. I hadn't decided on wheels yet. But after that, it was going to be single turbo and all that kind of shit. So it was going to go down a different route, and the graphics were going to come off. Although I was thinking about keeping a single, small, thin red stripe on the side of the car. But everything else was going to go away.
Yeah, the stripe's not offensive. Not for that car. Oh, Jesus. What was I just going to... Do you still... Like, you used to fucking love nitrous. Do you still fuck with nitrous on stuff ever?
You know, yeah, I don't need it on an R35 GTR. I mean, I'm
you didn't need it on the R34 either.
And again, it was built as a show car. If you look at all the piping and how that nitrous kit was run, all bent, hand-bent lines for the fuel on the nitrous side, I mean, it was a work of art. It was a work of art.
You ever actually use it? Did you ever actually spray that?
Yes.
You did?
Yeah.
Did it work?
Oh, yeah. Choked the car out. The gag was, remember in the movie they did the nitrous purge?
Yeah.
Out of the front bumper. So in a script meeting, we actually had this discussion when Brian's going to pull up and make an entrance. I said, he's got to hit the purge.
Of course. Like,
what's the purge? So I took everybody outside and showed them the purge. I said, you know what would be cool is if it blows a chick's skirt up like the Marilyn Monroe movie, or what was that movie back in the 1960s or 50s? Or
7 Year Itch. Right?
7 Year Itch, yep. And they did it. They actually used it in the movie.
I know, it's really funny. So, in hindsight, it's the most Lieberman scene ever. Like, I've always found, like, I always, whenever a car's got nitrous, though, I always like to see where, what creative place they purge from. You know, there's the standard, the windshield sprayers, right? Back in the day, my homie had a 5.0 Mustang, and the you know, 5.0 on the side, and the decimal point on the side was the purge.
That's rad.
Came out of the 5.0, like, that was pretty
really
dope.
Cool. Yeah. WS6 is out, you said
the nostrils.
The nostril thing.
Yeah. This like, dude I know, Dave Vitale. Tally had a Diablo with spray on it, and it fucking came out the engine bonnet, like it came up from the engine. It was gnarly, like an afterburner.
Yeah, so it's fun.
I saw a Cobra with the snake in the front. It came out of there. And
that's cool.
Guys with LED wipers, and it would come up from the wipers, which made it look badass.
Oh, with LED lights under it, so it'd be like a fog machine on your wipers.
Rad.
Yeah. You could go down to Pep Boys and buy LED windshield washer sprayers on top of the hood back when they were still doing that.
That's so
people
funny.
Would run the purge out of that thing. And it'd be all red and evil and shit.
That's awesome.
I'm kind of about that, actually. That's cool.
Love it. Then my Diablo had nitrous too, the blue one, the first one.
Did it really? You had nitrous too?
I had a custom chrome roll bar coming down between the seats with dual padded suede armrests and 2 5-pound nitrous bottles sitting there, right?
That's hilarious.
It all worked. I'm driving down the 405 by John Wayne Airport, and this cop CHP pulls up next to me, looks inside the car, does a double take, pulls in behind me and pulls me over. what's with the bottles in the car? I said, would you believe they're oxygen tanks? Said, no, I wouldn't.
Is that illegal? Is it illegal to have nitrous in your car?
No, it's not legal to have nitrous in your car. It's illegal to use it technically because it's a dangerous gas. You're supposed to have a sticker on your car that says you're driving around with, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like a hazmat sticker.
Yeah.
Actually, that'd be kind of a cool theme for a car. You could really do something fun with that now that I think about it.
Somebody's going to rip off your idea and trademark it.
I don't know. I would really like to try a car that had a really big shot of spray. I used like a 150 shot once, and honestly,
that's pretty big.
It didn't feel that big. It didn't feel that different. But I don't know. But that's only when I only tried once. I don't know.
I had a 125 shot on my 96 Impala SS, and you definitely felt that.
It's all about percentage, right? If you're starting with 200 horsepower and you go up 125, that's a big boost.
That's a big boost, yeah. You got to hit it the right. Well, you know, I don't have to tell you about how nitrous systems work on street cars and drag race cars, but yeah, you need to get somebody to take you to a ride with a 1,000 horsepower car and a 300 shot of nitrous.
I I would like to, sure. Yeah, if there's someone out there who's running, no, don't contact me. I don't want all these people contacting me. No. Yes, do. I don't know. I can't decide.
How about a one take video?
I'd be so afraid of blowing up someone's shit. I don't like driving cars that use alternative fuels. Like whenever we would film a car that had like meth injection and stuff, like I'd be like, this is gonna break. It's gonna run out of whatever it needs and just break. I don't know. Hey,
we just gotta play. Well, it's like when we filmed that guy's GTR. Like we had to get that was yeah. back before you could get E85 in as many places as you can now.
Yeah.
So we had to fill up at his house
and then go
film, and then we had to like make sure the route to the road or to the film site wasn't that far, and it was kind of dicey.
Now it's like filming EVs. Mm-hmm. Same thing. Yeah, yeah. Craig, you need to try a Taycan if you haven't yet.
A what?
A Porsche Taycan.
Oh. I saw the videos on it, and it looks superb. It even makes a cool sound, too. It sounds like a spaceship.
Yeah, it makes evil space noises. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
I think there's room. I think there could be a Taycan in Fast and Furious. I can see that happening.
There probably will be in the next one.
I hosted a symposium at Barrett Jackson, and I had the stunt director from Too Fast, Too Furious, which is Terry Leonard, who used to get in barroom fights with John Wayne. That's how old this guy is.
Really?
Literally, right?
Wait, did John Wayne lose? Because that would just destroy his image.
No, I meant that him and John Wayne would rough up a bar.
Oh, boy, okay.
Yeah.
On the same team.
So anyway, this guy's got more pins in him than a fucking pin cushion, right? Over the years, all the shit he's done. And he told some amazing stories. So I asked, I was the moderator of the panel, and I said, so what's going to happen when there's no more internal combustion engines in movies? And it's all electric cars. She says, fuck it. We're going to dub the sounds in anyway.
They tried to do it in Demolition Man, and then they had to bring somebody, get us a 442 for the end. We need some excitement in this shit. Yeah. No, we're a ways from that. We're okay. They're not, gas cars aren't going anywhere anytime soon. We're going to be fine. Yeah.
I mean, even if the cars, if they turned it off tomorrow, there would be Dodge Challengers running around for another 50 years.
Yeah, dude, and FCA will still find a way to put a Hellcat motor in something else. There's at least three more cars they can get a Hellcat motor into before they're done with this.
Dodge will have a charging station that will be powered by Hellcat engines.
That's so funny. An electric car. 700 horsepower generators.
And then when that runs out, they'll sell it as an engine for your generator for your home.
Right.
So funny.
Engine swap. Hey, Craig. When they had these picture cars, how many of them had the original engine or the cool spec engine, the built engine, and how many of them were just swapped in with like an LS or something weird? You know,
that's a great question. It changed over the time. So the first movie was unique among movies because, as you guys know, because you're in the business, usually when a production team is going to make a movie, they go out and buy the cars they need and they just make whatever cars they need the way they want. So if they have to have a cool interior, like when they do Gone in 60 Seconds, they had a car for interior shots, right? They had a car for stunts, cars for jumping, cars for crashing. But they have one beautiful car where everything's nice. If they need one with an engine, then a proper engine, then they build one that has a proper engine. So Fast and Furious 1, they rented all the cars from private people. Every one of the main cars was rented from a private owner. So some of them.
There's a reason they don't do that anymore.
So some of them had big engine mods, like the Eclipse was just a fucking 420 Dodge engine in it. It wasn't even turbo. So there's that. The Super, of course, my Super had a big single on it. What else? The RX-7 was 300 horsepower. It had upgraded. It was a BPU car.
Tell you what, that car hasn't aged well at all. That's probably the ugliest car. That might be one of the ugliest RX-7s. Fucking ever, that car. That's not a good-looking car today.
It's like anything else. Some people love it, some people hate it.
Did they, like the big scene in the beginning, it's nighttime. I feel like this car looks completely different when it's shot at noon, which is what all these pictures on your website look like. It looks like a deeper red. Sorry, the RX-7.
Dom's RX-7. They don't show it much during the day in the movie. Yeah.
Okay, so you got to remember they were using a warming filter over the entire production, right? So at night it's going to look different than it is to the day because it's different filters. The DP of the production was a guy by the name of Erickson Gore, brilliant core, I think it is, and he's a brilliant guy. But I remember working with these guys, they making the film look very, very orange. And if you look at Race Wars, any of the Race Wars footage, you can see it's very orange.
Yeah.
So it changes the color, the way the cars look on screen versus real life.
Yeah,
but back to the engines, the Charger, the big Charger that we used in the first movie had the Hero Charger. We had a rented engine. So there was a guy from Indianapolis, I forget his name, who sent us out this big old 572 big block Hemi with meth injection and nitrous system, dropped it in the car, got the shots of them talking around the car, cut, take the engine out, that's it. And then they put a 318 in, or a 360 or whatever it was. I forget, 360s or 440s. But Tokyo, our second movie, other than My Skyline, which had some engine stuff, there was only one other car that really had big engine mods, and that was a Slapjack Supra, because we bought another Supra and Greddy sponsored it and put a big T78 on it and cams and intercooler and all that shit. Everything else was pretty much stock engine stuff. Then you get into Tokyo Drift and everything changed. They used whatever leftover cars they had, and then they just built cars the way they needed. Most of them had no engine mods because you saw nothing.
Yeah.
You never saw under the hood of the cars.
Yeah, just stunt cars, really. Fairly pretty stunt cars.
And that's the way it's gone since then. I mean, the Chargers now that they're using for the movies, they take the front clip off. Dennis McCarthy has a clip that he's pre-built that he sticks onto the front of these cars that have all common hardware. They're all using the same engines, same power steering pump, same control arms, everything. It's just a clip they stick on the front of the
car. Smart.
Isn't it all just like LS's and C5 Corvette shit? Isn't that usually?
I think there's a mix of LS's. I mean, Dennis could tell you better than I. I was at his warehouse in July, and I just kind of looked at it, and I wasn't really taking notes or pictures, but LS's and 318s or whatever they're using, just, I mean, stuff that's got to have common parts, because anywhere you go in the world to film, you know, if you're in Tahiti, there's not a Pep Boys on the quarter.
Yeah.
Right. So you got to get stuff that's common.
Wow. Can they just adjust the size of that car or that clip so it can fit under different bodywork?
I'm sure they can, because they've changed the length on some of these cars, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, the suspension, they're doing off-road suspension on these things, depending on how the car is going to be. It's completely different. Now, these cars are all built now for stunts. And although they may have one Hero car that's pretty where the interior is done, you can see most of them are sheet metal interiors, right? They don't do much. I mean, the Bentley that Tyrese used, of course, with big old giant dubs on the fucking thing.
Yeah.
That was a flood damage car that they used.
Well, that fucking Mercy he drove, our friend Freddie bought and fixed it up. And when he got it, oh my God, was it trashed. That thing was a piece of shit.
You know, I like to say that movie cars have a rougher life than a street hooker.
They're fucked.
Because they're ridden by a lot of people and nobody ever cleans them up.
Well, and for the most part, I mean, you know, most of the time, it's fucking especially Fast and the Furious, they had... No, they have no real value beyond the production. You know what I mean? It's like the cars, I realize they rented a couple of your cars in the first one, but like, you know, they weren't special cars. They're fucking Hondas and shit. It's like, who cares? Fuck them up, trash them, get rid of them. There was no long-term collector prospects for that kind of stuff.
Well, when I was done filming the first movie, I said, okay, well, that thing's going straight to fucking DVD. That's honestly what I said. And then, you know, Snowball will do another stuff. But some of the cars became collectibles. You know, the Super from the first movie, the Eclipse for sure, the Jetta. I mean, the Jetta sold for, the Hero 1 sold for $80,000 to some dumb soul. But
Frankie Muniz.
To Frankie Muniz.
Yeah.
I think, right?
Yeah, right. Frankie Muniz. Exactly right.
That is a terrible car.
George Barris got a hold of one of the Eclipses and APC, Pep Boys it out. And that car is sitting over in Europe in the Paradigit collection, the same guy as my Super. And if you think, and I'm not even going to go into that car, it gives me agita.
I respect George Barris, but I hate almost everything he ever built.
Yes.
Exact same feeling.
So there
are a few cars that have become collectible, but after Tokyo Drift, that was it, because the cars are pretty much transient in the series. Right?
Wait, what is the graphic? Zach, punch in on the graphic. What is the inoffensive graphic on the, is it a surfer?
The Jetta, I think it's like a womb.
It's like an angel.
It looks like an angel riding a rocket.
A rocket. Yeah, it's someone, someone riding on a rocket.
It's a woman riding a pocket rocket.
Yeah, she's about to peg the competition.
That car sucks. I definitely hooked up with a girl in high school that wore UFO pants and a wife beater and did lots of Molly and drove a car that looked a lot like that.
What are UFO pants?
You know what You know what UFO pants are?
No.
They're like pants that like had like cargo, they're like cargo pants with like strings that dangle from them, from like parachute pants, like girl, like raver girls would wear them.
Ah, this makes more sense. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry to hijack with the UFO pants, but you know, it is what it is.
But yeah, the graphics, you know, the thing with the graphics was I campaigned for having no graphics on the cars at all because I knew every other background car was going to have graphics, right? So they decided, no, we need to make the cars have graphics that were really way over the top that wouldn't look like anything that we would see on set. And that scenario was mission accomplished.
Fully.
When I drove around with that car, people, when I pulled a car show, people would go, look at this old fucking dude. I was like 32 at the time or something, right? This old fucking dude driving around some kind of, what is this shitbox thing with these stupid-ass graphics? And so I hated it. I hated that thing.
Look at that. In the, we got the photo up of you in some period garb standing next to the, I think it's a pink S2000.
Yeah, Suki's car in 2002.
Yeah. I think that car's the Peterson right now, isn't it?
It is. It is. Yeah. I was just there.
That thing is fucking ugly.
They paid $11,000 per car to airbrush those things.
Really? I can't believe they painted all that. That's wild.
The airbrushed artist name is a guy by the name of Noah. If you look him up, the artist known as Noah. I forget his last name. Very talented guy.
Still working?
Oh. Sorry?
Still working? Still painting?
Oh, for sure. He's an artist. The guy's absolute. I mean, the guy was talented. There's no question about it.
Our friend, the street artist, Tristan Eaton, who was on the show recently, super into cars, really talented guy. They just sent up two of his paintings on that Dragon rocket.
On Crew Dragon. Yeah. Sent him to the space station.
Awesome.
To the space station. I don't know what they do. Do they hang it in the... What do they do with it? Do they blast that shit out into space for like other people to find, or is it to just make the space station prettier?
I don't know, actually. Maybe it's going to go on somewhere else later.
I don't think they just release it because you know, they've got the momentum of the spacecraft going around the Earth.
Unfortunately, I'm guilty of just reading the fucking headline and not the article in this case. Right. It's called Humankind. It's flying on the SpaceX astronaut launch.
Well, and it's made out of like gold, titanium. It's made of like three different metals. It's got all these different, you know, symbols on it to represent humanity, all that kind of stuff.
It's really cool. Tristan's the man. He sent me, he did the Pearl Jam Fenway Park concert poster, and he sent me two of them to hang at Westside. Very excited. They're in frame.
Wow.
That dude is the man. Zach, do we have anything from the people today?
Just a little bit. Just a little bit.
We're going to go to the audience questions, Lieberman.
All right.
What do you got?
Derek's Garage says, Craig, I'm thinking about replacing my clutch type differential with an Eaton True Track. The clutch type works okay, but is this worth doing? This is an 87 Grand National, mostly for straight line stuff.
Not a Grand National expert.
That's.
I mean, an upgrade is good, depends on the power, right? What kind of power is this guy going to make? Assume it's still the single turbo. Is he going up in power? How is he going to use the car?
I don't know the difference between what he's got there and what he's looking for. Do you know the difference?
Well, not specifically. I haven't looked at that particular model, but what was he calling it?
What did he call it?
So he has a clutch type diff, which is, that's what came in, my Crown Vic, but you know, it's carbon discs that press against each other and they lock it when they get too much torque. Someone in the comments is going to correct me, I'm sure, and that's fine. So he was looking at putting in one of these Detroit like True Tracks, which is a helical gear style limited slip.
Oh, okay.
Right. So I think it's just a little bit more durable and probably locks up more aggressively.
Yeah. Oh.
It's a locker diff. So the thing with lockers is anytime you put the car in reverse or you make a real tight turn in a parking lot, you're going to hear the clunk. It's going to go chick, 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 chick. The GTRs do this too, right? They've got a locking diff. So when you, there's actually a button you can press on the GTR to unlock it so that it'll just spin one wheel as you're backing up so you don't get the guck.
Oh, really? I didn't know that had the button.
Drive in one before you, that has that setup before you get it, because I had it in my Mustang for a while and I took it out.
Yeah, you don't want something that chunks too tight if you're making tight turns. That's annoying. Yeah. Anything that makes your car worse to drive most of the time is bad.
Right, like welded diff. Same thing.
Yeah, if he's just doing straight line, I don't know how you're driving in a track and just doing a straight line, but if you're not driving a track and it's on a trailer and you're just drag racing, then yeah, you're going to want a strong diff and you could use a locker and be fine.
Nice. All right. Trent Schaefer says he loves your video clips. Are you going to make a video about the Trans Am from Fast and Furious 4? It's one of the only muscle cars this particular person likes. I got a picture up here of that.
Yeah, I remember the car. It's one of the cars I like, too, because I grew up with the Smokey and the Bandit Trans Am. One of my neighbors had it, and I thought it was the baddest shit ever. And then later on, I found out that the car makes only 180 horsepower.
Yeah.
403, 6.6-liter motor.
Our friend Musto has just bought his second. He's obsessed with them. Who drove this car in Fast 4? I don't remember this car at all.
Did anybody watch Fast 4? Because I can barely remember it.
Is this a bad guy car? Who fucking drove this thing?
Not one of the main guys, probably one of the bad guys. I barely remember that movie.
Yeah. Was Fast 4 Brazil?
No, it was Mexico, yeah?
There's too many goddamn movies. I can't even fucking keep them straight.
Mexico, the drug runners, they had to do the audition and then the drug runners.
The tunnels.
The tunnels.
Yeah, the tunnels, right. Yeah, okay, I remember now. Oh, I think that was
the opening chase.
Yeah, opening chase scene. Oh, okay. All right.
Is the opening chase scene, which hard to find.
The short answer to that question is, am I going to do a video of XYZ? I'm going to do all the major cars, but as I've been saying to people who are regulars, you're going to be disappointed because these cars, if you didn't see the engine on camera, that means that the cars were either mostly stock or subbed out with an engine that had common parts. So there was going to be nothing special about them. Probably a stock Trans Am with whatever wheels they deemed appropriate, and then a couple of backup cars for the stunts with suspension modifications and maybe some Magnaflow exhaust or something like that. But you're going to be disappointed, man. They're not full builds or anything like that.
Fair.
People are going to learn that Santa's not real. all right. Chapme asks, did you ever consider putting a Road Warrior car into one of the movies as a crossover? And Matt, your Ragu sauce is awesome.
Oh, my Ragu sauce is awesome.
I'll have to get some. I don't have that kind of leverage. I stopped working on the movie after part three. That's because they brought in a whole new director, a whole new production team. And those people tend to work with their circle of people. They're within their sphere of influence. And so it went a different direction. And you got to remember, I was the tuner guy. I was the guy who was the conduit to the tuner market at the time, who could get all the parts for cheap or free and build those relationships because we were poor in the first movie. So after part three, it just went a completely different way, you know? And so I had very little involvement and I had no input on cars for anything.
Well, then it became like build just, you know, stunt cars and jumping cars and crazy specialized off-road cars and like,
It goes like this, man. You know, Dennis McCarthy and his team, they're smart people, and there's other people involved in the process. But Dennis sitting there looking, he looked at Mia. She was in an Integra, Jordana Brewster. She was in Integra in the first movie. She wasn't in the second movie. She wasn't in the third movie. And then fourth movie, they put her up. They go up the food chain, right?
Mm-hmm.
NSX. So everything is always going up the food chain.
Mm.
So this is why it's getting difficult because these guys, now they're driving Bugatti Veyrons, Koenigsegg.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the same thing with the car world, right? You are the new one always has to have more power. It's always got to be bigger. It's always got to have more space. Yeah, so it's just the way it goes.
It's still car movies. I mean, it's movies with cool cars in them. I mean, how many times do you see a Lycan Hypersport on the street? Never, right?
I was pretty sure that's not even like a real car. Yeah. Although those guys, the company that made that thing, it's called W Motors or something. Is that the one? The company, that's
the guy called
the Hypersport, right?
The Lycan Hypersport is built by W Motors.
Yeah, W Motors. They have another car. There's the Fenner or something is their other car, which is real. I saw it in person. It was driving down the road, like in L.A.
Do you know that car is built basically on a Porsche Boxster?
I do. Yeah. A Porsche Boxster, a chassis with a very powerful roof built engine. It's a really, really masterful disguise of the underpinnings.
Yep.
It probably, if they haven't fucked it up, it might even drive really nice.
Yeah.
It's possible.
I saw them doing the work on the car. Saw videos of them doing the work. Looks like the guys definitely know what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, the it's not my aesthetic taste by any means, but the Fenner, which is the one Zach has on the screen right now, I did physically see it in person driving in Los Angeles and at a car show, and it was real. So I was surprised at that.
It's got an 800 horsepower roof engine.
Yeah.
With 980 newton meters of torque. Wow. Yeah. Fast.
And it's got a PDK. The one I saw had a PDK gearbox, which I think was pretty cool.
I'm waiting for the Devil 16 to make an appearance in Fast and Furious.
The Devil 16.
That great.
Remember when that guy, the Devil 16 is like a Top Fuel drag car with like a body put over it. Right. I think they tried to run it and it doesn't actually have a cooling system.
Correct. It does not have a cooling system.
Yeah, that's something they might want to look into. 5,000 horsepower. You know, Top Fuel cars are making 9,000 or 10,000 horsepower, but yeah, if you're going to drive on a street, you're probably going to need a couple four radiators or something.
Yeah, I don't think it actually like runs. I don't think you can run it. I think it literally doesn't have a cooling system. It's not good.
It's vaporware. It's just yeah. You know, Instagram fame, I guess.
Although I just saw a video of that new SSC Tuatara doing a pretty serious looking pull. That seems to be real. That's
they're,
good.
They're real. They're real. I mean, Jason Castro designed that car.
Yeah.
We used to know that guy, Junis Khan. Remember Junis?
Yeah,
Khan?
Junis, when he worked there. Yeah, I don't think he works with them anymore.
Well, it's been many, many years.
Yeah, but, guy with a very cool name.
They ran on speed up there in up in Montana or someplace, right?
I don't know where they're gonna. They said this thing will go 300. I don't know where they're gonna do that, but they just posted a video of it doing like a 60 to 160 pull, and it was awful aggressive looking.
60 to 120 in 2.5 seconds.
Yeah, yeah.
That's bananas. And I saw a press release. They want to move on to working on a smaller, slightly cheaper car. So this is like you know their flagship hypercar, and then they'd have one that is detuned or a little bit less expensive and a little less crazy. So
good. I should look at that one.
Yeah.
Get at me, folks. I want to drive it.
Right.
Castriota, hit me up. I know you're out there. Come on this show and talk about it, and then hit me up.
It's pretty, you know, revved to 8,500 RPM, and if it goes 300, woof.
Yeah. Woof. I don't want to go 300. I'm okay. I'm okay on the nut.
I don't want to do it on a road. I would do it at Bonneville.
Bonneville, yes.
Space.
Yeah, yeah. What's the fastest you've ever driven, Craig?
203 at night in my yellow Diablo indicated.
Nice. That's a good one.
Wow.
Great. Yeah. Luckily, I had those 300 ZX headlights, the high beams. $230,000 car, fucking Nissan headlights. But and the girl I was with at the time, I said, look, 200 miles an hour. She's like, that's how I knew I was with the wrong woman.
Yeah, because that's a loud experience, too. That's not a cushy Bentley Flying Spur 200. That's a screaming 200.
I did 211 in a Jetta, in a Bonneville prepped Jetta.
That's cool.
Which was not nearly as dramatic or scary as you think it would be, because it's Bonneville. You have a lot of room and parachutes. Parachutes are good.
But was it a cool experience to do it?
Oh fuck yeah! No, I'm not saying it wasn't cool. No. It just wasn't scary.
Right.
It wasn't scary. Yeah,
I get it.
Yeah, there it is. Very silly. Craig, thank you for your time. Other than your YouTube channel, which Zach will bring up now, Craig Lieberman on YouTube, and is it Craig Lieberman 42 on Instagram?
Craig Lieberman _42.
_42 on Instagram. He's got a lot of fun stuff, you know, obviously behind the scenes, history of all these cars, and more. Anything else you want to plug before we get out of here, Craig?
That's it, man. We got to get together again soon.
And the book on Amazon, Crashing Cars.
Crashing car, yes.
By
yes.
The book, yeah, yes, and I would like to get together soon when we can do that. you got to come see West Side Collector Car Storage. It is basically done. They're painting the staircase today.
Yep. Once we get clearance to start going around again, yeah, we'd definitely get up there.
Well,
I've been following you on YouTube and the tour that you gave the other day.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, no, the people seem to like that video. We're going to do, before we open, I'm going to do a virtual car show where I have my friends come fill the place with their cars and we get video and pictures and all that kind of stuff. So I'd love to have you and that GTR come join in that.
Be happy to be there.
Awesome. Thanks, Craig. I appreciate it. Live, folks, We will be back tomorrow, Friday, June 5th at 5 p.m. Doug DeMuro will be phoning in from San Diego, which I don't know if you know this. It's means a whale's vagina. We will be, yeah, we'll be here with Doug from, yeah. I'm out of things to say. That's our show. Thanks for everybody. My brain just turned off. The Smoking Tire Podcast is powered by Shout Engine. Get your own damn podcast at shoutengine.com. It's easy. All you need is a microphone, a connection to the internet, and ideally something to say. Craig, love you, buddy.